Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we open with some good news for backcountry residents regarding some brand new fire protection rolling out. We also have a warning from CAL FIRE after two near misses involving drones and firefighting planes. From Sacramento, we have the latest on a bill to mandate vaccines for children in California's public schools. Then on our Chaldean Corner, hear about efforts by local Iraqis to secure freedom for Iraqi immigrants who have been detained for over 4 months by immigration authorities at the border. We'll have results of an East County Magazine special investigation into why there are so many untested rape kits in El Cajon. We'll tell you about a ban on e-cigarettes adopted by the Metropolitan Transit District. On Green Scene, hear about a major agreement forged by G7 world leaders calling for an end to fossil fuel use in a major step toward reducing greenhouse gas emissions to combat climate change. On our Capitol Report, learn about a sneak attack on net neutrality slipped into a funding bill by Congress. Hear why a woman who left her dog in the car while she was at the El Cajon courthouse is facing charges of animal cruelty. On our agricultural report, we'll tell you about a landmark Supreme Court ruling in the case of a California raisin farmer and how that could impact other agricultural programs. Learn about actions that California is taking to prevent oil spills in railway transport and get details on a high court ruling impacting the privacy of records kept by hotels and motels on their customers. On the second half of our show today, our newsmaker interviews are Chuck Brown with the San Diego Concert Band and John Bolton from the Water Conservation Garden. They'll be talking about a wonderful upcoming evening of music in the garden, a concert to benefit both of their organizations that's coming up on July 26th. Today, we'll also be replaying our interview with the owner of the Principia Winery in Ramona on our Vines and Wines segment. And if you're looking for some ideas for how to save water on your landscaping amid this fourth year of drought and mandatory water cutbacks, Connie Beck on Ready, Set, Grow will be giving you some ideas. We'll tell you about a new Kaboom playground that's just opened in El Cajon, and we'll have details on a major expansion of the Santa Isabel Preserve approved by county supervisors. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
A welcome site will soon be rolling out to some of the outlying areas of the county. Five additional fire vehicles will be hitting the road for the backcountry as a part of the San Diego County Fire Authority and CAL FIRE effort to continually respond to wildfires and other emergencies. The five new vehicles are expected to be in place at the respective fire stations before the end of the month. Two new water tenders and three light fire engines called patrols will go to fire stations in some of the locations where the 2003 and 2007 wildfires took place. Potrero, where the Harris Fire began in East County, Shelter Valley near Julian, Sunshine Summit near Warner Springs, and Duluth in North County. The county's general fund paid for one patrol. The funds for the other four vehicles came from the county's Department of Housing and Community Development. The Department Administrator's Community Development Block Grant, or CDBG, funds on behalf of the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development grants, which can be used for firefighting equipment in low to moderate income areas. Since 2005, CDBG funds have been used to buy 14 engines and 13 water tenders for backcountry fire stations. This year, nearly $1 million was set aside for fire vehicles for the County Fire Authority. CDBG funds have been also used in the past to purchase self-contained breathing apparatus, radios, and other emergency equipment for stations in the outlying areas. County Fire Program Manager Herman Reddick says that CDBG funds are a long way going toward helping the San Diego County Fire Authority reach its goal to extend year-round, round-the-clock service to 1.5 million acres of the unincorporated county. Communities that have been historically devastated by wildfires in the past need these specialized fire vehicles. This funding allows us to add fire equipment and apparatus to the areas that need it most. The County Fire Authority and CAL FIRE work together under a cooperative agreement to provide a regional county fire protection system for unincorporated areas of the county. CAL FIRE San Diego County Fire Authority Deputy Chief Kevin Lawson says the introduction of the patrol vehicles is an exciting and much-needed operational development. The patrols are smaller and lighter vehicles designed for quick attacks. They carry 200 gallons of water, a pump, hose, and basic life support equipment. County volunteer reserves can drive and operate the vehicles with a regular Class C driver's license. That means county fire reserves can now be the first to respond and provide basic life support services, quickly downing vehicle fires or respond to fires until additional personnel or career staff firefighting units arrive, helping to save lives and property. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is DeVario Bell.
With wildfires raging across California, an unmanned hobby drone interfered with firefighting aerial drops last week at the Sterling Fire in San Bernardino. According to CAL FIRE Captain Kendall Bordeser, it was the second time in 2 days that a drone halted airdrops. The Los Angeles Times reports that an air tanker laden with over 10,000 gallons of fire retardant was forced to turn back from the Lake Fire due to the drone, as did two smaller planes that had to dump their loads of water elsewhere because it was too heavy to land carrying them. As a result, the fire swelled to even larger proportions. Those close calls have prompted CAL FIRE to issue this stern warning to hobby drone users. If you fly, we can't. Captain Bordeser warns, a collision with a hobby drone could easily result in major damage to firefighting aircraft, injuries to the pilot and crew on board, as well as firefighters below, and worse, a mid-air collision. It is unsafe for unauthorized drones to be flown anywhere near a wildfire. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health report. A bill that would eliminate the personal belief exemption for childhood vaccines in California now heads back to the Senate for concurrence and amendments made in the Assembly. The Assembly voted 46-30 to pass the measure, Senate Bill 277. If the amendments are approved and the bill is signed by Governor Jerry Brown, then children who have not been vaccinated for diseases such as measles, mumps, and whooping cough would not be allowed to attend public schools in California unless the child has a medical condition such as an allergy or an immune system disorder that could raise the risk of complications for certain vaccines. Amendments approved would allow unvaccinated children to be homeschooled, participate in independent study projects overseen by school districts, or attend private schools. And there, parents must be informed of vaccination rates, California Healthline reports. Unvaccinated children would not be allowed to enter preschool, kindergarten, or seventh grade without immunizations, but they could keep attending their existing schools between those grades. If the bill is signed into law, California would join Mississippi and West Virginia to become the third state requiring vaccines, with only medical exemptions allowed, not religious or personal beliefs. Jay Lee, the president of the California Academy of Family Physicians, praised the bill's passage. He said, "To make a decision not to vaccinate a child is actually to make a decision to potentially harm the community." And he adds, "The health of the public is going to be protected by this measure." Opponents, however, have voiced concerns over parental rights and over substantial donations made to campaigns by pharmaceutical companies that make vaccines. According to the New York Times, opponents have vowed to take legal action against the bill and have launched recall campaigns targeting lawmakers who supported the measure. So how did San Diego's representatives in the state legislature vote? San Diego State Senators Marty Block and Lorena Gonzalez, both Democrats, are co-sponsors of the bill. Republican Senator Joel Anderson voted against it in an earlier Senate vote. Senator Ben Wesso did not vote at all. Among local assembly members, Democrats Tony Atkins, Mary Salas, and Shirley Weber voted in favor, while Republicans Brian Jones and Rocky Chavez voted no. Coming up next, the Chaldean Corner on East County Magazine's radio show, bringing you news for and about our region's Iraqi Chaldean community.
Clergy members and Iraqi community leaders held a prayer vigil calling for the release of Iraqi Chaldean Christians held in the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Detention Center. Since the rise of ISIS, many Iraqi Chaldean Christians have fled to neighboring countries. Some have been fortunate enough to make it across the Mexican-U.S. border, but many of these Christians have now been imprisoned in the detention center for up to 4 months without any indication of imminent release. Despite testimony from Christian family members in San Diego and East County who can vouch for their identity, Mark Arabo, a leader in the Chaldean American community and an organizer of the vigil, issued this statement: "For Iraqi Christians to flee ISIS only to be imprisoned once in America is shameful." He added, "Since when did the symbol for our nation become a wall and stop being our Statue of Liberty? Our community and individuals from all denominations are joining hands in a profession of faith." Arabo concluded that he and others at the vigil fully expect their prayers, words, and action to lead to swift and immediate release of these imprisoned Christians. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Leon Thompson.
An East County Magazine investigation has found that 137 rape kits in El Cajon have never been tested. We submitted a records request to the El Cajon Police Department after hearing an NBC TV news report that San Diego Police has 2,800 untested rape kits. Nationwide, an estimated 400,000 rape kits have never been submitted for DNA testing or had the results entered into a national DNA database. And yet, testing every rape kit can produce undeniably dramatic results. In Detroit, where 11,000 untested rape kits were discovered, a decision was made to test them all. DNA evidence in just the first 1,600 of those kits tested led to the identification of 100 serial rapists and another 10 rapists who have been convicted. But both the San Diego and El Cajon Police Departments claim they have no real backlog and no intention of testing most of these kits. Here's why. The definition of backlog depends on who you ask. The Joyful Heart Foundation, a rape survivors group that released the data on San Diego Police Department's untested rape kits, wants to see every kit tested. They define backlog to include every rape kit that hasn't been tested, regardless of the reason. But San Diego Police Lieutenant Scott Wall told NBC that his department had only 2 rape kits awaiting testing. The rest won't be forwarded by the police to a crime lab to be tested. The reasons include victims who don't want an investigation, cases where detectives concluded no crime was committed, or where there just wasn't enough evidence to legally enter the information into a DNA database. The department does keep kits on file in case a victim changes her mind so the tests can be run later. Similarly, El Cajon staff attorney Barbara Luck told East County Magazine that its department's untested rape kits were not tested because of circumstances that include, but aren't limited to, a decision of the district attorney's office not to prosecute, cases where a suspect was arrested and the case was subsequently adjudicated, or where the suspect pled guilty, or it was determined in the course of an investigation that no crime occurred. She added, "Based on these circumstances, the rape kits are not submitted for testing and are not considered backlogged." Asked why rape kits are not tested when a suspect pleads guilty to determine if his DNA may match other victims in unsolved crimes, Luck explained that in California, DNA samples are already taken from all convicted felons and those DNA samples are entered into the national DNA database. DNA used to be collected from people arrested as well. However, collecting DNA from people who are arrested but not yet convicted has stopped, pending resolution of a court case, People v. Buza, that has been accepted for review by the California Supreme Court. Luck disclosed that earlier this year, El Cajon's chief of police asked the crime lab to categorize in detail each of those untested rape kits in El Cajon. That process is expected to take several months to complete, since it is a low priority without pending prosecutions. Across the nation, however, at least 17 states now have proposals to improve testing of rape kits. These range from simply requiring law enforcement agencies to inventory kits not yet tested to requirements that rape kits be analyzed within a designated time period. 3 states have passed laws to mandate statewide accounting of all untested rape kits. Congress recently passed the Sexual Assault Evidence Reporting Act, or SAFER, which aims to improve data collection and establish better standards for evidence collected in sexual assault cases, as well as help provide funding to cover costs of tests, which can run $500 to $1,500 per test. Testing rape kits holds potential to not only solve past crimes, but prevent future ones if a serial rapist is taken off the streets. CBS recounts the case of Megahan Ebos in Memphis, who was raped when she was 16 years old, but police never tested her rape kit. When she heard about a suspected serial rapist arrested in her neighborhood that she'd lived in, she demanded that her rape kit be tested, and the DNA was found to be a match. That serial rape suspect pled guilty in her case and is now in prison. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
The Metropolitan Transit System Board of Directors has voted unanimously to ban the use of electronic cigarettes on all trolleys, buses, bus stops, and transit centers. places where it is already illegal to smoke tobacco products. MTS Chief Executive Officer Paul Jablonski states, "The popularity of electronic cigarettes has grown significantly in recent years. We now have uniform policy between the way we treat traditional cigarettes and electronic cigarettes. Currently, it is prohibited for passengers to smoke in MTS buses and trolleys and within 25 feet of any bus stop, trolley station, or other MTS facility. The new ban, which expressly includes electronic cigarettes, will go into effect on July 18th. Fines associated with the ban will be $50 for the first offense, $75 for the second offense, and $100 for the third offense. The amended ordinance will prohibit passengers that smoke or carry a lighted or smoldering pipe, cigar, cigarette, or tobacco, or use any electronic smoking product or device that causes smoke, mist, or vapor in any form. Electronic cigarettes have also been banned by many other local jurisdictions, including the County of San Diego, City of San Diego, El Cajon, La Mesa, Lemon Grove, and Poway, due to health concerns and a rise in teenage smoking tied to e-cigarette use. California transit agencies have banned electronic cigarettes as well, including the North County Transit District, LA Metro, and San Francisco's BART. MTS operates 95 bus routes and 3 trolley lines locally. MTS is expecting to set a new record this year with more than 97 million riders. For more information on how you can use public transportation, you can visit sdmts.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jawan Armstrong.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. It's been front page news in Europe, but scarcely reported in the United States, though the news is of earth-shaking proportions. On June 6th, at a meeting at a Bavarian resort, all 7 of the G7 world leaders agreed to end all use of fossil fuels by the end of this century. They also agreed to reduce greenhouse gas emissions 40-70% by 2050 compared to the 2010 emission levels. In another sweeping commitment, they pledged to limit global warming to less than 2 degrees Celsius compared to pre-industrial levels, Reuters reports. German Chancellor Angela Merkel, dubbed the Climate Chancellor, led the successful efforts to gain commitments from all G7 leaders of Britain, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, Canada, and the United States, which was represented by President Barack Obama himself. Next up, the G7 leaders aim to create an agreement at the upcoming United Nations conference in Paris, where some 200 countries will work to set a new global agreement on cutting greenhouse gas emissions. The recommendations reached by the G7 leaders for reducing global greenhouse gas emissions are within the range that was recommended by the United Nations Climate Change Panel and drew swift praise from environmental groups. Germany set the model, having shut down all of its nuclear plants and pushed forward with renewable energy sources backed by strong public support. As of April of last year, Germany produced 74% of its power from wind and solar. Japan and Canada initially resisted the G7 agreement but ultimately supported it. Japanese resistance stemmed from the closure of all 48 of Japan's nuclear reactors after the Fukushima nuclear meltdown following a powerful tsunami and earthquake. Japan has no fossil fuel reserves, and despite an increase in use of its renewable sources, still relies on imported oil, gas, and coal for most of its energy. Canada has large reserves of oil and gas, potentially profitable resources, though also sources of controversy, as the XL pipeline controversy has shown. Avaaz is a global civic organization that has championed climate change action by organizing a 700,000-person-strong climate change march and claims to have secured 2.7 million signatures on a petition for carbon-free fuels delivered to world leaders. A statement from Avaaz reads, "Just last year, climate change seemed to many of us like a behemoth that was dooming our species to a significant probability of extinction. But now Avaaz voices hope, stating, most experts now believe the tide is turning and momentum is building to get a global deal in Paris this year that will set the world on course to a solution. It will be a long fight," the global environmental group concludes, "but for now, we celebrate a battle won." This is East County Magazine's Capital Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
More than 60 civil rights and public interest groups have sent a letter urging Congress to protect the Federal Communication Commission's decision to keep the internet open. They're protesting a rider attached to a must-pass government funding package. Timothy Carr is with the group Free Press. He says the provisions buried inside a spending bill that's 150 pages long would cut funding the FCC needs to enforce net neutrality rules.
This is one of the more sneaky ways to do it, is to actually slip a couple of lines of language into a budget appropriations bill.
Advocates claim that by eliminating the FCC's ability to protect net neutrality, the appropriations bill would have a chilling effect on First Amendment rights and the economy. The American Library Association, the National Hispanic Media Coalition, the American Civil Liberties Union, and the Electronic Frontier Foundation were among the groups sending the letter. In February, the FCC responded to nearly 4 million public comments when it decided to protect the openness of the internet. No fast lanes for corporations and slow lanes for average citizens. Carr says since the ruling, an entrenched phone and cable lobby has worked to punish the FCC in the courts and now in Congress.
The public on the issue of net neutrality have been overwhelmingly in favor of open internet protection. So we're seeing the backlash of that decision.
Carr adds that the funding package is inching closer to a vote before the full House, but there's still time for members to remove the provision. Dan Hyman reporting for the Public News Service.
A woman who left her dog in a hot car at the El Cajon courthouse on June 19th has been arrested and charged with animal cruelty. After a citizen reported that the dog was in distress, sheriff's deputies found the doors locked and windows rolled up. They tried to rescue the pit bull terrier by breaking a window of the vehicle, a silver Volkswagen Jetta, but discovered the dog had died. Officers determined that the temperature in the vehicle was approximately 135 degrees, while the outside temperature was 95 degrees, said Lieutenant Walt Miller. The officers learned that the owner had left the dog unattended in the vehicle for approximately 5 hours. The dog is believed to have died of excessive heat exposure, though a necropsy will be performed to confirm the cause of death. Deputies found and arrested the dog's owner, 46-year-old Victoria Williams of Brawley, who had been in court. She has been booked into the San Diego County Jail Women's Detention Facility. Pets, children, or senior citizens should never be left alone in a hot car, even for a few minutes, since temperatures inside a vehicle climb rapidly and death from excessive heat can occur swiftly. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
How you gonna keep 'em down on the farm after they
This is Shawan Armstrong with East County Magazine's Agricultural Report. You could say you heard it through the grapevine. The U.S. Supreme Court justices, after hearing arguments in a case that has sweeping significance for farmers nationwide, ruled that a Fresno grape grower is entitled to compensation by the government for crops seized. The raisins were taken under a federal program aimed at preventing an oversupply and keeping prices plumped up to sustain the market overall, one of many such farm supply management programs across the nation. But Fresno farmer Marvin Horn objected and formed the Raisin Valley Farms Marketing Association. The suit contended that if the government wanted to take any part of farmers' crops, it should pay for them. The crops taken are used in programs such as federal nutrition programs in school. The majority of justices agreed, with only Justice Sonia Sotomayor dissenting from the full opinion, though several disagreed with portions of it. They found that the taking violated the Fifth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The amendment states that private property cannot be taken for public use without just compensation. Chief Justice Roberts made clear that raisins are private property, the fruit of the grower's labor, not public things subject to the absolute control of the state. He added, the government has a categorical duty to pay just compensation when it takes your car, just as when it takes your home. He added, the Fifth Amendment protects private property without any distinction between the types. The Fifth Amendment states that private property cannot be taken for public use without just compensation. It is frequently a subject of dispute, leading the National Federation of Independent Business on Monday to call the new decision a very important case for small business owners. California is a major source of raisins. Remember those dancing raisins? The federal marketing order has been in effect since 1949 and similar orders are in place for nuts and other crops, orders that should soon shrivel under the new ruling. But the court did leave the government some negotiating room, holding that the government can decrease payment to farmers by the amount of benefit that farmers are expected to receive through crop seizures aimed at propping up market prices, National Public Radio reported. Associated Press reports that Horn called the high court action a great ruling for everybody, adding, "If you want my raisins, pay for them."
Soon, railroad companies won't be able to carry oil in California unless they have a safety plan and put aside lots of money to cover any future spills. That's because a federal judge in San Francisco dismissed an industry lawsuit last week against California's new railroad safety law. Patty Goldman with Earth Justice says the precautions required are common sense.
All other industries, like the tankers that carry the oil, the refiners, the pipelines, all of them prepare these oil spill response plans. It's time for the railroads to do the same.
Railroad companies had argued that federal law preempts states' regulation of the railroads. Goldman says the companies will now have more incentive to get the training, equipment, and communications systems in place to prevent the worst-case scenario.
They improve their practices. They can't get financial assurances if they're being really risky, and they figure out how to handle the oil better so that they won't have a spill.
California's railroad safety law will go into effect once regulations are finalized. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Guests at hotels and motels can now rest a little easier. The U.S. Supreme Court has struck down a Los Angeles law that allowed police to demand access to guest information at lodging establishments. It's now up to each hotel or motel owner to decide whether to challenge such requests from law enforcement. By a 5-4 vote, the High Court's justices found the law challenged in Los Angeles v. Patel to be unconstitutional because it forced hotel or motel owners to turn over registries or face arrest. Owners must be allowed to object and have a judge rule on whether or not guests' identities and personal information must be turned over to law enforcement or not. Law enforcement agencies across the country have contended that such laws help police combat crimes such as drug trafficking and prostitution at budget motels or hotels. But critics say business for hotels could be hurt, since some guests may even stay away if they know their personal information could be turned over to police, even if they've committed no crime. Justice Anthony Kennedy joined with liberal justices on the court to strike down the law. Conservative Justice Antonin Scalia penned a dissent, finding it reasonable for law enforcement to conduct random inspections as a means of halting smuggling of migrants and child sex workers. The government can still require hotels and motels to collect information on guests, but owners can't be compelled to turn that information over unless a judge finds just cause to require this. So for those who want to slip off in secret to a no-tell motel, best check with the proprietor first to find out the motel's policy on sharing your personal information with police if the owner is asked to do so. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barana.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Ladies and gentlemen, the San Diego Concert Band. Under the direction of Roy S. Anthony Jr.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Today, my very special guests are Chuck Brown, who is the president of the San Diego Concert Band, and John Bolthouse, the executive director of the Water Conservation Garden. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam.
Thanks for having us.
Now, John, I understand that you have an announcement about a very special event that's coming up at the Garden in July. Tell us about it.
Yeah, we're very pleased for our third straight year to host the San Diego Concert Band on Sunday, July 26. This is a great community event. It's also a fundraiser, a joint fundraiser between the Water Conservation Garden out in El Cajon and the San Diego Concert Band. And it's a great way to enjoy the summertime in a great botanical garden, an outdoor setting with friends and family, and some really wonderful music by a great community band.
That sounds marvelous and benefiting two very worthy causes here in East County in San Diego. The concert begins at 6 p.m. and the gates open at 4:30 for those that want to come early and stroll through the gardens. Now, Chuck, can you give us a little preview of what we can expect to hear at the concert?
Well, the band's summer series typically are lighter, more popular music that people are more familiar with. We're playing some exciting arrangements by three different Japanese composers, one of which is Moonlight Serenade, the famous Glenn Miller standard.
Oh, yes.
We're also doing another piece that is straight out of New Orleans. It's a street composition of When the Saints Go Marching In, which includes the typical go to the mortuary funeral beginning, and then the much more uplifting saints type thing when they're going back from the funeral proceedings. And we're doing some popular American marches like Chimes of Liberty. We're doing another exciting piece from the U.S. Air Force Band. It's the theme song for the Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. called Flight. Very interesting piece. So there'll be a lot of stuff that people are familiar with, and we'll introduce some new stuff that people hopefully will like.
Fascinating. And I understand one of those new pieces is by a local composer.
Yes. Each year, our band director, Roy Anthony, chooses a fanfare opening that we can use, kind of like the call to post at Del Mar for bands. And this year, he commissioned Adam Pezdek, who's a trombonist with us, also recently retired Marine Corps musician, who was in Roy Anthony's high school band at Mount Miguel High School. Adam's piece, the commissioned fanfare, is titled Matador Mountain. And as you might expect, being a Mount Miguel High School Matador alumni, there's a little bit of Spanish influence and fanfare trumpetry and lots of stuff like that for the opener. We've been playing it all summer, and people really seem to enjoy it.
Well, that sounds very exciting. We're going to listeners give you a little sneak preview of that piece, the fanfare Matador Mountain, right now. Thank you for sharing. That was marvelous. I'm really looking forward to coming and hearing the whole thing at the concert coming up at the Garden on July 26th at 6 p.m.
We're looking forward to you and your radio listeners being there.
Very good. Now, I want to talk a little bit more about the band itself, which has quite an impressive history. Tell us a little bit about how it all got started and some of the milestones you've had through the years, Chuck.
The band was founded in fall of 1989, and it was originally based in the La Mesa area at Grossmont High School, and we've rehearsed variously at Grossmont, Helix, and now at La Mesa Middle School. The band's membership, however, is from all over the county. We have people traveling from Rancho Bernardo, Point Loma, South Bay, and of course a lot of East County musicians as well from Spring Valley, El Cajon, La Mesa, and Rancho San Diego. The band has played a consistent series of concerts every year. We have two formal concerts at Joan Crock Theater in East San Diego at the Salvation Army Corps facility. And we do six or eight summer concerts, typically free in the park around town.
Yes, you just had one at La Mesa. The concert's at six out there. And our reviewer, Jaime Meerman with East County Magazine, wrote of the band, "Their love of music shows in the quality of their interpretations, their discipline, and the warmth of the sound they project."
And we thank Jaime for those wonderful words. We've been playing in that particular venue, a nice amphitheater, as is the Water Conservation Garden ever since 1990, when the trees in the park were no taller than our tallest musician, who happened to be 6 feet seven. And it's always a pleasure. We opened the summer series there this year again, and we're always happy to play in that venue.
Very nice. I understand that you are in the running for a National Sousa Award. You certainly do a marvelous job with the Sousa marches when you play them. Tell us the progress that you're making toward the award.
The John Philip Sousa Foundation has a special awards program for community bands called the Sudler Silver Scroll. And in order to apply for the distinction and be awarded the Silver Scroll, it takes 3 years to compile programs, musical excerpts, a demonstration CD, publicity, reviews like Mr. Meerman's, and everything like that. So we're in the second of 3 years of putting all this together. And it's not so much a competition as it is a recognition. The foundation may or may not award any Silver Scroll awards any particular year, and sometimes they may award more than one.
Listeners, if you just tuned in, we are speaking with Chuck Brown, the president of the San Diego Concert Band, and John Bolthouse, the executive director at the Water Conservation Garden, about the upcoming An Evening of Music in the Garden event on July 26th at 6 p.m. Now, John, for those who may not be familiar with the Water Conservation Garden, can you tell us a little bit about it, its mission, and how it got started?
Well, Miriam, I guess the quickest way to put it is, remember the last drought we were in?
if you're
from San Diego, back in the late 80s.
Filling those buckets up from the shower.
You did it back then. Okay. So you were a leader back then too. Well, as a consequence of that drought back in the late 80s, early 90s, a couple of the water agencies, got together. Otay and Helix got together with Cuyamaca College and said, you know what? Let's put together a demonstration garden for our community to show folks how they can do it right, do it the right way. In their landscaping, to plant California native water wise drought tolerant plants, and how you can save water and still have a beautiful landscape. So that was kind of the founding of the garden. We opened to the public in 1999, so we've been open for about 16 years now.
Yeah.
Over that time, we've garnered additional support in the community. We have a very robust volunteer corps, almost 100 volunteers at the garden. We've grown our programs. We've enhanced and expanded our demonstration exhibits at the garden. So we are really making a name for ourselves, not just in East County, but also in the entire region.
Yeah, it's certainly a beautiful place with a lot that you can learn there. How many acres do you have?
We are just under 6 acres. So we do a lot with a very modest space right adjacent to Cuyamaca College.
Yeah, and it's more than water conservation now, although that's certainly extremely important, probably even more so than when you first opened your doors. You can also, listeners, learn about FireWise landscaping and a lot of other things, vegetable gardening and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, it's important. A lot of people don't realize that the two, water conservation and FireWise landscaping, aren't necessarily the same. We had a house once where there were some slope stability issues, and we went out and planted for that. And we said, we want to make sure we get something that's really drought tolerant. And after we put it in, someone said, well, you know, those are flammable, don't you? They're one of the worst things from a fire stamp. I went, oh, no. So it's really good to cross-check both of them when you're planting up your yard.
That's an excellent point. Actually, yeah. It's all about the types of plants you use. And with regards to erosion control and with regards to fire-wise gardening, it's all about where you put them. And we actually have a couple of demonstration gardens for both of those, erosion and fire-wise. The other key in proper gardening, particularly here in Southern California in our semi-arid conditions, is proper irrigation. You can put the best water-conserving plants in your landscape, spend lots of money, but if you don't use the right irrigation, you're just wasting your time. So you want to make sure water gets right to the root of your plants, and only to the root of your plants. There's no need to spray water all over the place and waste our water by having it evaporate. Mm-hmm. So and we have all those types of demonstrations at the garden, both in our programs and in our demonstration gardens.
And I understand for people who love butterflies and native plants, you've got some new exhibits to share. Tell us about those.
Yeah, last spring we opened our butterfly pavilion, and just a couple of weeks ago we opened our new native habitat garden. And this is a kind of a direction that more and more landscape architects are going, which is ecology landscaping.
Yeah.
Is planting putting plants in your home or HOA or commercial properties that can supplement or complement the local habitat. I mean, you as a homeowner can have a positive impact on the local ecology. And so we have these two popular new exhibits that help folks learn how to do that. And by the way, it's also really neat to bring kids and families to see all the butterflies as well.
They love it. Children and butterflies, you know, just made for each other. I think we had a butterfly garden ourselves at our old house, and my kids just loved watching those butterflies hatch out of a chrysalis and learning a lot about nature.
The science behind it is fascinating for all ages, actually, yes.
Yeah. Back to you, Chuck. Can you tell us what else the San Diego Concert Band has coming up this season?
Yes. Besides our concert on the 26th at the Garden, we are also playing again at Balboa Park at the Organ Pavilion in the Balboa Park Twilight in the Park series that runs every summer for about 3 months. Every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday night, there's free entertainment at the park. The Organ Pavilion's a great venue. The good sunshine, early evening, great place to go. Another place you can take a picnic if you'd like. We'll be playing there on August 11th, mm-hmm. and the concerts this season begin at 6:30 p.m. and run for about an hour. After that, we're going to be playing a very late concert in September. It will actually be the closer for the Sundays at 6 series at Griffin Park in La Mesa. We're combining with the Delta Music Makers from Ladner, British Columbia. Ladner is a little town south of Vancouver. They host a band festival every year, and we've been corresponding with them. They'd like to get our band to their festival in Vancouver, and they're making a Southern California tour, and they wanted to swing by San Diego and play a joint concert with us. So it'll be two bands for the price of one, free.
Well, very good. It sounds like you've got a very versatile repertoire and some amazing programs coming up this summer. Where can people go to get ticket information about the concerts coming up this summer, including the one we've been speaking about, the concert on the 26th of July at the Water Conservation Garden?
All of our concerts are free in the venues that we play, except for the Water Conservation Garden. And being a joint fundraiser, we obviously have to have donations to raise funds.
Mm-hmm.
Tickets are available live at the garden in their gift shop and from band members. But more simply, you can go to the San Diego Concert Band website, www.sandiegoconcertband.com, and there's a link there to our ticket sales, and you'll be able to get an electronic ticket from the web right there.
Very good. And John, if people want to learn more about the Water Conservation Garden, not just the concert, but all of the wonderful programs that you have there, maybe come visit, where can they go to find that?
Well, that's very easy. It is at thegarden.org. And we also actually have a very active, dynamic Facebook presence as well. So you can actually track us on Facebook and on Twitter. But as Chuck said, we also welcome folks to come out to the garden. Like I said, we're right adjacent to Cuyamaca College. You can get an idea of all the various programs that we offer as well, many of which are free to our members.
Very good. I want to thank both of you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Vines and Wines with your host, Greg Maness of the Maness Vineyards Estate.
Hello, San Diego. Welcome to Vines and Wines. It's a radio show that introduces you to many of the rising new superstars and energized people in the local wine industry that will forever change the landscape of San Diego as it emerges into a brand new EVA wine growing district.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today I am guest hosting the Vines and Wines segment on our show, and we are on location in Ramona's Highland Valley, the heart of wine country up here. And our very special guest today is Alfredo Gallone with the Principe de Tricase Winery. Alfredo, welcome to the show.
Hello.
So I understand that your family has a very illustrious lineage in Italy with its roots in Greece. Tell us about that.
My family moved from Greece in the 1500s to southern Italy. And because at that time southern Italy was attacked on the coastline from the African tribes, my ancestor organized protection for the coastline. And the king of Naples heard about this valor and named him as Principe di Tricase. And so the lineage started with him.
So he was recognized for his heroism by being named the prince of all the lands that he was protecting. That is amazing. Now, I also understand that your winery here specializes in a grape called Alianico, which originated in Greece but is no longer grown there. It's grown in Italy, and now you're bringing it here to Southern California in Ramona. Tell us what is so special about the Alianico grape and wine.
Well, we produce here three grapes, Alianico, Aleatico, and Nebbiolo. And we're just starting with some Petit Syrah, but mostly are Italian grapes that are very old, ancient grapes. The Aglianico was used by the Romans to go around and to plant new grapes everywhere because it was very hardy. And the wine mostly was capable of traveling versus other wines that are more delicate.
I'm told that the Aleatico was the favored wine of a very famous person in history.
The Aleatico was the wine that Napoleon used to drink when he was a prisoner at the island of Elba. And if you go on Wikipedia, you'll find out more about him loving the wines and being happy to drink that kind of a specialty wine, which is available here now in Ramona. And is made the same ancient way it was made then today.
Amazing. It's really one of the most unusual wines I've ever tasted. Can you tell us about that?
The Aleatico has the rose flavor and smell. And is just coming out of the glass when you pour it. Without any addition whatsoever to the grape itself or to the wine, it's just a natural smell, which is really, really amazing.
You also have a wine called Romantico that's a dessert wine. Can you give us some details?
Yes, the Romantico is the same Aleatico grapes dried out in the sun after harvest and then squeezed. It's a very particular wine with a strong aroma, beautiful for dessert, a little high in alcohol, but it will really give you a romantic evening.
Well, thank you for sharing that information.
We also, from the skin of the Aglianico, Aunt B Botanicals makes a cream that is used for botanical clay mask or for preserving, supposedly preserving from aging.
Amazing. Okay. Now, I see that a lot of your wine bottles here have medals hanging around them. Tell us about some of the awards that you've won.
In the last 2 or 3 years, after my wine started, to my taste, was kind of good. I didn't know if it was just me that I liked it or if it was a good wine. So I sent for competitions all over the country, and I won like 12 medals in 2 years.
Very good, including some impressive ones, Finger Lakes International Competition in New York, to name one of them. I understand that you're only making these right now in very small batches, so how do people get these wines?
Our production is very limited, and we make around 6,000 bottles of wine every year. So we will be able to sell it through membership and through club membership only to maybe 200 or 300 people that will enroll to our club membership, and that's how we distribute our wine.
Okay, so that's through pineandwine.com.
Yes, or they can call me on the phone numbers that are listed on the web. And to you listeners, if you mention that you heard about this interview and you come to us, I'll make sure you'll be very happy and surprised with some special treatment. Thank you.
Well, that's very kind. Now, you also grow Christmas trees. Tell us a little bit about how you got into that.
Well, when I bought the property here in Ramona in 2007, it was a Christmas tree farm. And I was here when the last year the former owner was selling the last of his trees. So everybody that came begged me to keep the Christmas tree farm open. And so we have pine with the Christmas tree and wine with the grapes. And we have pineandwine.com, and we still are open to sell the Christmas tree at Christmas time.
Well, very good. And if people want to come and do tastings, I understand that it's by appointment only right now. Is that correct?
Yes, we are open by appointment. You can go on our website and pineandwine.com. And my number is there. You can call me. And anytime I'm up here, I'll be happy to open up for you and show you my winery, taste my wine from barrel or from bottles.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
Thank you very much for coming.
Cheers. This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat Report. 23-year-old Francisco Castro has been arrested for an arson fire at the House of Hope, a Santee shelter at Prospect and Cottonwood. The fire occurred back in October 2014. Castro was taken into custody by the Fugitive Task Force. He was a guest of one of the tenants. Last week's arrest followed nearly 9 months of investigation by the Sheriff's Bomb Arson Department. The shelter once housed up to 50 people and had been the subject of investigations by the Santee Sheriff's Station, Santee Code Enforcement, and the District Attorney's Office on violations that included misuse of food stamp cards, allegations of sexual assault, and living standard violations. A KNSD Channel 7 News investigation before the building was burned found conditions described as crowded and deplorable. The TV news team also revealed that residents said they were trading their taxpayer-funded food stamps for shelter provided by an outreach ministry through Pastor David Barrett. At the time of the fire, most occupants had been notified that House of Hope was shutting its doors and they had already moved out, but some remained despite a court-ordered eviction notice that would have resulted in a lockout days after the fire occurred.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I just came from a client's house where we spent almost all of our time talking about how she needs to change her watering. When I asked her, "How often do these sprinklers come on?" she said, "Every day." And I said, "Oh my goodness." And I said, "What's your motivation in having me here today? What is it that you need us to talk about?" And she says, "I'm spending so much money on water, and it doesn't really pay for itself because I'm not getting the kind of fruit I want, and my plants don't look that great." So I thought this would be a great thing to talk about. Most of us overwater, and in overwatering, that really means we're probably watering much too shallow and much too often. Here, it's hot, and the sun beats down on the soil, and it dries out the soil, and then the roots get dried out, and then the plant suffers. How do we change that? Well, we change it by not watering every day, every other day, every third day. What we want to do is possibly not even change the mechanics of how we're watering. We just want to go to the time clock and change the timing. If you're watering for 5 minutes every day, you would do much better for your plants to water 20 minutes every fourth day, and then possibly even stretch it out from there with a few other tricks I'll tell you. But the main thing to understand is, if you are watering every day for just a few minutes, then what's happening is the roots are only going to grow where the water is, in the top 4 to 5 to 6 inches of soil. And in that depth, there is no resistance built in for when the Santa Anas come, for when it gets to be past the 4th of July and it's 100 degrees in East County or higher. Those poor plants have to depend on where their roots have grown in that surface area of the soil. So what happens when you change that? What happens is that the more water you give, the less frequently, the further down the roots will go. So if you can train your plant roots by watering correctly, the roots will grow down deeper. They will withstand our heavy, heavy winds and that beating down sun of midsummer, and your plants will be much healthier and much happier. This is especially true of plants that come that are either native here, which you hardly ever water, or the plants that most of us use, the Mediterranean type plants. These are plants that are used to going a while between waterings. Your citrus trees. People come to me and say their citrus isn't doing very well. It looks kind of funny. I say, "How often are you watering?" "Every other day." "Okay, that's the problem." You don't even have to go look to find out what the problem is. What you need to do is water your citrus between maybe once a week
if it's a big old tree and it's been in a long time, every couple of weeks, maybe every 3 weeks. I have a lemon tree on my property that we water religiously in June, July, August, and September, once each month. But when we do water, we water it nice and deep. We water it so that the water goes down at least 2 feet deep. Makes a huge difference. And then the other thing that we're going to do with our watering issue is we're going to mulch everything. But that's something I'll talk about in another one of these episodes.
A new Kaboom playground at Bill Bett Park in El Cajon is now complete thanks to about 200 volunteers who completed the project in just 5.5 hours. As an added bonus, the city also installed a new adult outdoor fitness park located next to the playground. The big build took place Saturday, June 20th at Bill Bett Park, located at 543 North Pierce Street. The playground was custom designed with help from community members. Construction began at 8:30 a.m., with El Cajon police and firefighters pitching in alongside members of the public. Monica Zek, public information officer for the City of El Cajon, extends a big thank you to the playground's funding partners, including the City of El Cajon, Foresters, Stony Kids, the El Cajon Kiwanis Club, and Kaboom. This is El Cajon's third Kaboom playground in 3 years. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Shawan Armstrong.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. San Diego County Supervisors voted Wednesday to buy 175 acres of environmentally valuable land that will link the east and west portions of the Santa Isabel Preserve and could potentially allow expansion of the Coast to Crest Trail that is envisioned to stretch from Del Mar to Volcan Mountain near Julian. County land use and environmental group officials, in their written report to the board, said the 175 acres contained valuable habitat, including grassland, riparian scrub, forest, and mountain meadows. Supervisor Diane Jacob, whose supervisorial district includes the Santa Isabel Preserve lands, said the property was important for several reasons. In addition to connecting the two separate portions of the 5,000-acre Santa Isabel Preserve and allowing the possible expansion of the Coast to Crest Trail, Jacob said the land also included important habitat for the county's multiple species conservation program and could provide important access for the county's proposed $7.1 million Santa Isabel Nature Center. Jacob called the acquisition a significant asset, not just for East County, but for the entire region. The county's Department of Parks and Recreation created the Santa Isabel Preserve in 2001 by acquiring 5,322 acres from the Nature Conservancy. The preserve was made up of two sections separated by private properties. And then in 2010, the Nature Conservancy donated another 84 acres to the Parks Department for a future nature center.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.